Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 12 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So announcements this week. There were several announcements. Actually, this was a busy week, and I would say it got busier towards the end of the week.
It was a little overwhelming this weekend, I have to say, because we had our weekend plans, and we'll talk a tiny bit about that maybe towards the very end of the episode. But all of a sudden today, we saw that, surprise, Sam's going to appear at the Scottish BAFTAs. What? My booty was parked in front of the computer for 2 hours that I had not planned.
Oh, you enjoyed every minute of it.
I did not say I didn't enjoy it. It was not planned. It was fun to watch.
So we'll come back to that in a second. So I think the first thing that happened in the week was Uncle Lambert was cast.
Yeah.
At least he was officially announced, I should say. And he was announced as Prentice Hancock, who I believe is our first Doctor Who connection. Mm-hmm. He was in Doctor Who in the 70s. You got to go back a ways to find him on Doctor Who, but he is our first that I know of connection to Doctor Who. Which we also got the next director for episodes 3 and 4 listed on CompuServe, and they named Brian Kelly as the director for the third and fourth episodes. We looked up his IMDb page, and we cannot verify that it's the same gentleman, but it's pretty likely because the gentleman that we found on IMDb who was a director with the name of Brian Kelly also directed episodes of Downton Abbey and he did an episode of Dracula, the new TV series,
and Inspector Lewis,
Torchwood, lots of British connections.
I adore Torchwood.
So we're fairly confident that it is the correct Brian Kelly, but we cannot verify it yet because it hasn't been posted on his IMDb site yet.
Well, yes, and it also has not been announced by Stars.
I mean, correct.
We believe that Diana would not have false information on this. However, we don't know if this is the correct Brian Kelly.
Correct. We also, of course, right after we announced it, everything. Right after we announced the whole book tour and the dates and things, they announced that the publication date was being pushed back to June, which means that probably all of the dates that were listed on the Random House website have also been pushed back. But our new publication date is June 10th, 2014, which I know it wasn't intentional, but if they wanted them to be released close to simultaneously, they actually will be now, I'm assuming.
It could be.
Much closer.
Much closer, yes. We don't know when Outlander will
be released. But they'll both
be released.
Released, it looks like, in the summertime.
In the summer, yeah.
Lots and lots of new picks this week.
Pretty much, in a typical week, we might get, one or two, three maybe, and then that's our whack. But this week, we had a few things that were released.
We had a deluge.
A few things that were released by Stars, or by people involved with the production. And then there was the Daily Mail article. That was the big source.
It was a bunch of pictures from the Daily Mail. We had had to have been like 8 or 9 pictures.
It was quite a few. And I have to say, we had our first view of Jamie, and our only view thus far, of Jamie in a kilt. Well, Jamie at all. In the one that was released on October 24th. The Thursday. I will remember that. Thursday, October 24th. But this was our first shot of Claire, meaning Katrina in dress and character. And it was
It was the first time seeing Claire
in the past.
In the 1700s garb.
In the 18th century, yes.
So, because we already did see her in period garb, which was the 40s, but we hadn't seen her yet in any of her 1700s finery. And I really want her sweater.
Once again,
it's like got a collar and sleeves and a tie, and it's like a little Red Riding Hood capelet thing. I don't know what it is, but I want it.
Once again, Terry Fanning and the entire costume wardrobe team has outdone themselves. It is just, everything we've seen has been gorgeous. Everything. Speaking of Ms. Fanning, Terry is now officially on Twitter.
She is, and she is active.
She's incredibly active, which we love. It is so great to have someone who is so
responsive.
Not even, well, I was going to say, not just close to the production. She's in the production. She's involved with the production. But it's great to have someone who is so involved be so active.
She's probably the closest, or the person who gets the closest to Sam's inseam, other than Katrina.
Okay.
As a costumer.
Okay. We'll go with that.
Just saying. There are perks to being a costumer. Okay, the other pictures we got, Ron posted a picture of Sam and Katrina seeing the set for the first time, which was so much better than the Highland cow he showed last week. While I loved the cow, I thought that this was probably the one of the most exciting pictures for me to be released.
I agree. The picture that Ron released of Sam and Katrina seeing the set for the first time, I think that was one of the neatest things that I've seen thus far in the entire, whatever's been shown to us. And the look on Katrina's face was of such wonder and excitement. It almost gave me goosebumps, and it was just not, we didn't even see anything except her face. No, and that was amazing.
But if they were that amazed by it, yeah. I can imagine how amazed we were going to be by it. But what I enjoyed was the look on Sam's face, because he almost looked like he was measuring himself against it. Like he was looking at the majesty in front of him and thinking, I have to measure up to what they're providing me with. Mm-hmm. And I think he sees himself worthy, and I think he's worthy. I think he's up for it.
I agree.
I did enjoy, if we talk a little bit about the BAFTAs today, because I know we were going to talk about that, was first, it was like the tease for it, where they showed Sam getting fitted for a kilt. Was that the teaser shot of that, and everyone was like, oh my god, he's getting fitted for a kilt. And then the next shot that came was, hey, this is him backstage in his kilt. And then, hey, here's another angle of him backstage in his kilt. And then, hey, here's one more, and him with the presenter, and they all look good. And then he presented. And then the internet was covered in screenshots.
Yeah.
Everyone was racing to get their screenshot.
And part of it, and we contributed to that.
We did. We put some screenshots up, but we were not the only ones. And what was funny to me is that it seemed that everyone, and screenshots are very difficult to get on a computer because you're all print screening and trying to save it.
On a computer, not really. On a video streaming on a computer, it can be, because you don't know if you're going to get like that
good picture.
The movement swish of them. Who knows?
So, but it seemed like a lot of people got the same shots, which they were all
very
good
similar,
shots.
Yeah.
So. That was fun. There was also an article released today on The Scotsman where they interviewed Sam.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a really cute article. I enjoyed it.
Was it not one of the first articles or interviews we've seen done with Sam since he was... Definitely since filming began, but since he was cast?
It's the first I can recall.
It's the first... Yeah, same here. So...
He's been mentioned in articles by name and by resume, if you will, where they kind of mention, Sam Heughan's been tapped to play Jamie, the character, blah, 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 blah. Whereas this was the first time it seemed like somebody sat down with him. Because pretty much since he was cast, they've had him, like...
Training or...
Under lock and key.
Outlander boot
busy.
Camp
yeah.
He's
been busy. So this, it almost seems like this is the first time they've trotted him out on the town to be seen. Other than, you know, the other premieres he's gone to. But even at that other premiere he went to for his film, nobody interviewed him about it.
Mm.
But this one was good.
But some of the exciting bits that I remember from the article were that he mentioned his fans. He mentioned the fans of Outlander, that they knew so much about the books and about the story, and that so much of the production staff, people there, were fans of the book, which we've talked about before. And he also said that when they are filming, that it was almost as if they keep us in mind as they're filming, as they're performing. And he said something along the lines of, almost as if we could slip something in and they would be able to get it. They would notice it. So there has been a little buzz in a number of places suggesting that this may have been talk of some kind of Easter eggs.
Well, I don't know if they would be official Easter eggs, but that So now, I guess now we're going to be looking for them, I guess is the biggest thing.
Well, now I'm going to... Well, okay, as we... Back to episode one or two. When this comes out, I can't speak for you or anyone else. When I watch it the first time alone in the dark, in candlelight, as I've said, with a little bit of whiskey...
You trying to relive the 1700s with the candlelight?
No, I'm setting my own mood. Okay. No, when I watch this...
Stop. She woos herself, people.
I woo myself. When I watch this for the very first time, not 2 and 3 and 4, but for the very first time, I will be watching it. Yes, I'll be watching everything, but it's for the story, it's for the effect, it's for the ambiance, it's for everything. Later on, I'll look for Easter eggs, maybe. If something pops up, I'll notice it. But hopefully there's nothing obvious. But yeah, now that I've had this little thing that I've read about and I'm wondering if it is it. It may not be. It could just be, you know, fans buzzing about it. But it'll be interesting. Very interesting to see what he means by that.
Yes, and he did say that it's a very good-looking cast.
Yes, he did not speak directly of love scenes with Katrina.
No, but he said she was sexy.
But he said she was sexy. And, yeah.
So it's good to know. I mean, we anticipated the chemistry because it's been spoken of already. But
yes.
I enjoy the back and forth between them. They had a really funny dialogue on Twitter this week. She made fun of him for his guy liner.
Katrina totally won. She said something about...
his guy liner.
Did you get a chance to wash off your guy liner? And then she also said... Oh, this was funny too. She tweeted to Graham.
I guess... No, she was tweeting this... I think it was just out... tweeting it out, but saying that
she had Ornico Flow going
no,
in.
No, she didn't. It was not Enya. Enya came later. It was an Alicia Keys power ballad that came on.
She had an Alicia Keys power ballad, and she got a look from Graham Tavish?
Yeah, he was apparently not amused.
Not amused at her choice. And so then where did Alicia...
Somebody else stated that they should have played it. He was more of an Enya guy.
Oh, was he more of an Enya guy, or he was more of an Enya guy? And then... she tweeted something about Ornico Flow.
Somebody, Ornico Flow.
For his ballad. And I think I tweeted something like, yes, if that's Dougal's new theme song as he walks in slow-mo and enters the set. And I tickle myself sometimes. So if no one else enjoys it, I do.
She may be the only person in the world who can tickle themselves.
Usually it doesn't work.
Metaphorically, not physically. And the last thing I have on my list... is Katrina released a... She didn't release it, but she linked...
She tweeted a link on
her Twitter page to a video that she was a part of, a music video for a band called Phoenix. I believe the song was called Chloroform.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was directed by Sofia Coppola,
mm-hmm.
and featured our Katrina.
And she, as always, looked gorgeous. And if I'm not mistaken... I watched the video once or twice, and if I'm not mistaken, the camera spent... as far, because it panned a few people who, women who are crying. But I believe it spent the most time on her. And I think you'll take this the right way. She gives good face. She gives good cry face. The camera loves her.
Did you see anything expressive about her chin?
I need to go back and look at her chin. Because no, I wasn't looking at her chin. I was looking at her face as a whole.
Well, then we'll put that on our to-do list. To go and look at her chin. So, on to the read-along.
This week, chapter 10,
The Oath-Taking.
Yes. So, in this chapter, Claire, yet again, poor Claire. poor Claire's, not the nuns, just the single Claire. Claire decides that it's the night before the gathering, correct?
It is the night before the
gathering. And she decides, yet again, and we'll see if she's successful or not, that this is the night to escape. And Mrs. Fitz had told her that everyone will be indoors in the hall. And, oh no, sorry, this is the night of the gathering. This is the night of the oath-taking. And this is the night that Claire decides to leave, to escape.
She decides this will be her best bet.
The best option, because everyone will be in there attending, either participating in or observing the oath-taking. So she makes her way out to the stables.
She was incredibly prepared.
Oh,
like,
yes.
She packed food. She picked out a horse. She had her warm cloak. She had her boots.
She repurposed a water bottle, which obviously back then would have been glass, from her medical supply closet somewhere and obviously filled it with water. But she, yeah, she must have had some kind of bag or stuff on her.
Which I think was incredible because she doesn't really know how to get back to where she's going. But she was like, I'm going to go. I don't know where I'm going. I don't really know how to get there. But I'm just going to go.
If she had actually made it, which I guess we gave that away. But if she had actually been able to go, that actually probably would have been the best prepared she would have been thus far.
Correct.
So she intends to go. She goes out to the stables to get a horse. And she, boom, falls headlong over something that she discovers is Jamie McTavish.
Well, something that grabs her, first of all, and then she discovers that it's Jamie McTavish.
And as they're chatting, he brushes, I like this too, he brushes the straw off of her, and she says, he brushed the straw from her backside with more force than I thought necessary. So I thought that was, hello, Jamie. So as they're speaking about her plan, it's funny that Jamie is not really concerned with the fact that she wanted to get away, but the method she used. He's like, this is not a good time because even though a lot of people are in there, the castle is being guarded. And also people who are coming, either still coming to the gathering, still coming to, I'm going to say it incorrectly the first time, coming to the tinkle. That's how I read this. The tinkle, I said, surely it's not a tinkle. It's a tinchel. And I looked it up online.
Was it a tinchel?
No, tinchel. And the two sources I looked it up were the same, although they come from the same. I looked in the Outlandish Companion, where the phonetics are given, the pronunciation there. And also, I pulled out my Outlander audiobook, and I listened to the lovely Davina Porter's pronunciation. And she also said tinchel. So it's not a tinkle, it's a tinchel. So not only is the castle really guarded, heavily guarded, but there are people who are still, who couldn't make it to the gathering or couldn't make it to the oath-taking, but who will be coming for the tinchel. So as she would have left, she would have been running into these people. So it would have been very difficult, if not impossible, for her to actually get away. So Jamie accompanies her back to the castle, and they are accosted.
But he's very reluctant to join her because, as she pointed out, he didn't appear to be wanting to go to the oath-taking either.
That's true.
He was sleeping in the stables, mm-hmm. trying to avoid this oath-taking as well.
And does she talk him into going with her? Or does he just think it's better if he accompanies her?
She's like, you really don't have to come with me. And he's like, no, he doesn't trust her to not continue to try to break out. So he is escorting her back. Plus, he's also afraid that there are some people who will be drinking that might not treat her as kindly as he would.
Most people, probably. So, male. So, he escorts her. And as they make their way, they are grabbed or accosted. And the two men basically walk Jamie. They are holding on to Jamie. And they walk him up to the castle. And as they make their way, Rupert appears and also basically accompanies them the rest
and
of the
way. And this is, I know you mentioned it either last week or the week before about Rupert, and you said that when we were talking about the casting of Rupert,
mm-hmm.
and you had stated that, I thought he was supposed to be fat, and I was like, I don't remember that at all. Because I did find a quotation where they called him fatly. That was the adjective.
Okay.
Rupert fatly did something. And I'm like, how do you fatly do something?
The main problem here is that the reason Jamie was avoiding the oath-taking, or even just the ceremony.
She called it. She did.
The problem is, or the easiest thing for him to avoid this thing was to avoid the oath-taking.
Correct.
If he could stay away from it while it happened, there was a good chance that it wouldn't be forgotten about, but people would be so, number one, drunk, and also concentrating on the excitement of the night, that he may not be as missed as if he showed up and then left or something like that. So he was trying to stay away. And because the problem is, if he was there and he swore allegiance, that he could be seen as a threat. right? If he was there and he did not swear allegiance to Colm, he could be seen as
a threat.
Well, a threat because he didn't, but also it could be more of an insult.
Correct.
And he may not survive the night, especially with people, everyone being in their cups, as it were. Jaime is given a Mackenzie badge. He's dressed for the oath taking, and he's given.
They dress him. They do.
And Claire watches.
He's like, I don't have any good clothes. They're like, oh, we'll take care of that.
And they give him a Mackenzie badge, and he puts it aside, and he tells Claire his own clan's motto. He doesn't tell her his name, but he tells her his own clan's motto, which, as we know, is Je suis prêt. So Claire remembers what old Alec had said regarding Lyra, and that her father would not let her marry outside the clan. And this is another kind of, it's another possible problem, or maybe not, maybe another thing, point for Jaime to not swear allegiance. It may take care of a lot as far as assuage people that he is not trying to be a threat because he is swearing his allegiance. But then he may be tied to Lyra because if he's part of the clan.
Well, she was certainly hopeful about
it. She was very hopeful about it. They end up in the oath, in the hall.
They didn't miss any of it. It's like they waited. No. They waited for them. It almost
pretty much
like, because Claire didn't miss a minute of it, and they appeared to be there from the beginning. Now she got there before Jaime. I think she went straight there, and
she joined the other women.
And she went with Mrs. Fitz
in the top, I think. And Dougal, the whole evening, the whole oath-taking ceremony begins with Dougal first swearing allegiance to Colm, and then others follow. Others do the same, and Jaime takes his turn, and as Jaime approaches Colm, Claire sees that Lyra is tense. Her fists clench, and she is just, you can read the, maybe not excitement, but the tension in her.
Can we just talk about the oath-taking for a second? It seems like it's Colm's personal drinking game.
Oh, gosh. But like, yeah, like, drink, exactly. Like, I can drink you under the table.
He was only taking, like, I guess small, not even sips, but like one drink per person. You know, we're sharing a drink, but I mean, that's a lot of alcohol.
He was correct. Drinking each time, and each person was, I guess, supposed to take a sip or a big sip.
And I'm sure it was the Rhenish.
Oh, it may have.
It was. They do mention that because when Jaime has his turn.
I thought the Rhenish is wine, and the whiskey served in a quick. I think it was whiskey. So when it's Jamie's turn, he fancy pants talks his way through this so well. He basically says, I ain't going to swear my alliance. I'm not going to swear my allegiance to you. But as long as I'm on Mackenzie lands, you have my friendship, you have my loyalty, you have dot, dot, dot. So he is, and people, or Colm approves, he shares the quake with him.
That was what was when all the breaths were held.
Yeah.
Because when he got up there and he did not take the oath to join the Mackenzie Clive.
It was like.
Clan, excuse me. Everyone basically held their breath and waited to see what Colm could do. He could have done several things. He could have ordered his death right there. He could have, you know.
Put him in prison, imprisoned him or something.
Or he could have done what he did, which is he accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really the smartest thing to do because that way he's basically put himself forward as not, I'm not a threat to you. You have my sword arm if you need it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my working hands if you need them here as long as I'm here. But he was able to stay true to himself and his own clan and not lose any sense of himself.
Both were able to save face. That's the most important thing.
Correct.
Jaime was going to save face probably no matter what, but most importantly, Colm was able to save face.
So Jaime really does, I think, have the soul of a politician. A little bit. He's very diplomatic.
Yeah, he does well in difficult situations. And when it comes time for him to take a wee draft or take a sip, he empties the blasted. I mean,
He pounds it.
He pounds it back, yeah, pretty much. So as the ceremony ends and Claire is... All the women, Mrs. Fitz is like, okay, ladies, all you girls, I don't care who you are, women, maids, everyone go back to your room now because this is going to be a busy night with celebrations, men drinking, and a lot of things are going to happen.
You don't want to be caught in the hallway by yourself.
And yeah, so get to bed now. So Claire's like, probably not a bad idea. So she goes up to a room, but since she's in a different area than she had been previously in the castle, she didn't really know her way well from where she was back to her room. So she gets lost, or she's probably in the right direction, but she gets lost as she goes back to her room, and she runs into some drunk Highlanders. She turns to escape, and then whom does she run into but Dougal. Boom, pounds straight into him. And he basically tells the other guys off. They leave her alone. But he tells her, you have to pay the price for, I guess, for running into him, for him having saved her, all the above. And he pulls her up against him tightly and grabs her bottom and kisses her. I have to say this with tongue. I'm like, Dougal, seriously? I mean, he's had a little to drink too. But Dougal, you can, I guess, I don't know. I guess to show her what a man he is, he's got to use his tongue, but whatever. So, and he's like, okay, get out of here now, or you'll have to pay a greater price if you don't leave now. So she goes, she leaves, she goes right to bed. The next morning is the Tinchel. It's a hunt. In this case, a boar hunt. And about an hour into the hunt, Claire is summoned to begin dressing wounds of one of the wounded men. As she finishes bandaging up the man, she hears a scream, and she knows from her experience what that type of scream likely is. She grabs as many bandages as she can, and she runs toward the sound. And as her mind is only on finding the source of this scream, she is totally unawares when the boar actually passes by her. Doesn't hurt her, just walks by her. And she goes to the wounded man, and Dougal is there in the clearing, or in the space as well. The boar, I guess, comes back to the area, and Dougal approaches the boar with a spear. And as he obviously is trying to kill it, he speaks softly to it in Gaelic, and he stalks it and ends up stabs it between the shoulder blades. The boar dies. So Dougal is speaking to Geordi, the very, very, very wounded, the mortally wounded man. Who had screamed. And he's, as he lay dying, and he's comforting him and hugging him. And here we see, and I think even Claire remarks on this, that it's a different side of Dougal. You could see that he actually can be tender. He actually can be caring, or at least we're seeing it now. And he is comforting the dying man. And Claire,
it seems like this is the point where Claire actually has time to look at the wounds.
Yeah. Well, she has seen, when she first got there, she saw that his leg wound was not, the femoral artery had not been severed. So it was not something that could definitely be stitched up and he would heal.
Right.
But then and then later on at this point, she's looking at his abdominal wounds, and it's just, I mean, his innards are coming out. It's just,
it's just fixable. It's sepsis waiting to happen.
Yeah. It's not a good thing. And as she and Dougal are around Geordi, Dougal mouths to her, can he live? And she shakes her head. And this is a very tender side of Dougal. And once she lets him know that Geordi will not survive, Dougal releases the tourniquet and Geordi bleeds out. This is also, you could say, we see this the side of compassion in Dougal. Because he, as Claire states, he could be taken back up, leave the tourniquet on, taken back up to the castle, and he would have died of infection and in pain, who knows, a week, a few days, but it would have been very painful. This way, it was a relatively quickly painless, comparably, and he was with the people he knew. And as a Highlander, it was maybe, as she said, more symbolic to have his blood spilled there, to die of a wound next to the beast that you had attempted. The beast that ended up dying. So a little more poetic, a little more.
Well, they'd always definitely it's like a Viking thing. You know, you want to die in battle. You don't want to die at home in your bed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's more of the machismo of the Highlander.
Mm-hmm.
More of an explanation of their rugged masculinity.
I'm not sure where I heard this or where I read this. I know I mentioned it jokingly. There was some meme going around about how difficult it is to classify Diana's books. And there was some meme about how it was like a mystery and a novel. It listed like 7 or 8 different types of genre. And at the very end, and it said cowboy novel, da-da-da-da-da-da, and a cowboy novel all in one, or something like that. And we tweeted that. But it was funny that what I said when I or we put it on Facebook. What I said when we posted that was like, all of these fit. It's like a mixture of all of these, but the cowboy. But the funny thing is, it's not a Western cowboy. But the more I think about it, the Highlanders are almost like Scottish cowboys. Not Western, obviously. But I'm like, so I'm seeing, so maybe actually her books are like, maybe the cowboy does fit. The Wild West, the Wild Highlands. So that scene where Geordi dies, as he's dying, it was, no, Ginger did not cry, but it was just so touching. And it was, we never, to the best of my knowledge, we haven't met Geordi yet, right? He may have been mentioned in passing. I don't remember the name, but in this very short, like what, page and a half, 2 pages from the time he screams to the time he bleeds out, Diana made us care for him. That just, again, shows you how well she does this. And because of that experience, as they are making their way back to the castle, Dougal, I think he grabs Claire's arm and says, basically, you've seen men die violently before. And she's like, yeah. And she agrees, yes, I have. And she goes on.
Well, and he didn't ask it as a question. It was not a statement of fact.
It was a statement. And she says almost an accusation.
Right.
And following the Tinchel, I still want to say Tinkle so much. Following the Tinchel, the Highland Games occur, as well as, well, excuse me, there's a funeral mass for Geordi, and then the Highland Games occur. And Claire, for the rest of the day, is patching people up, still from the Tinchel and also from the games. Claire decides, after she's stitched everybody up, to head to the stables for a little bit of downtime, and also in case she does run into Jaime, to apologize for bringing him into the hole, the oath. Taking.
As well she should.
And when she gets there, she sees both Jaime and Dougal. And Dougal, they both stand up and they say, come join us. And Dougal basically tells her that he'll be leaving in 2 days. And he's taking both of them, Jaime and Claire, with him through the Mackenzie lands. And the purpose is to visit the tenant and the taxman who couldn't come to the gathering. She says, why would you take us? What purpose? How can we be helpful? What purpose would there be? Dougal says that Jaime is handy with a horse, and he would take Claire as far as Fort William, where the commander there might be able to help her find her family in France or put them in touch with someone. Now, Claire knows that Dougal is not telling her everything, but she goes along with it because, of course, she has in her mind, woohoo, I'll be able to escape, or at least attempt again, because she's... But this time, it's probably, while I understand her character always wanting to attempt to escape, this one I think makes the most sense because this is as close as she'll be that we've experienced so far to the stones. Because Fort William was not too far from the stones. At least she knew directionally and distance-wise approximately how to make it back. So this seems like it would be one of her best chances.
I think that wraps up chapter 10. The oath taking for this week. Next week, we're going to take a little break from the read along to bring you guys a special interview that we have in the works for you.
We had the great opportunity to interview Miss Davina Porter. And in order to share that, we've decided to bring the entire interview.
We didn't want to cut it. Like, we were, I mean, while it was going on, while you're interviewing, or you think to yourself, well, if we have time, we can always cut things back if we need to. But there's not a minute of this interview that I want to cut. So we wanted to bring it to you in its entirety, and to do that and still maintain a relatively normal length for our podcast, we decided that we would make that be our focus for next week, and then follow up with the start the read along back up in the following episode. So that's about all the time we have in this week's episode. The 12th episode of the Outlander podcast.
Thank you, as always. Thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/Outlander Pod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at Outlander Pod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/outlanderpod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.